There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
I'm Helen Farmer, and this is On The Couch, here live in the Dubai Eye studio until 2 o'clock. Now, social media and mental health, it is literally never out of the headlines. Here are a little sample from the last 24 hours. How does using social media affect our mental health? How social media is hurting your memory? Social media copies gambling methods to create psychological cravings. Methods activate same brain mechanisms as cocaine and lead to users experiencing phantom notification buzzing, experts warn. Six ways social media negatively affect your mental health. And so it goes on. As we've said before, this is uncharted waters for us. We're in a generation where social media is truly entrenched in almost everything that we do. And many parents are navigating a new world where the digital natives quite literally speak another language in acronyms and emojis on platforms that many of us are simply not familiar with. But to guide us through this topic, and most importantly, answer my questions and maybe yours as well, I'm joined by Dr. Victoria Goodyear of the University of Birmingham School of Sport, Exercise and Rehabilitation Sciences. She's done an amazing study we'll be talking about later in the show. Good afternoon, Dr. Victoria.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Welcome to Dubai. So you're visiting, been over for a few days.
Yes, we've been visiting our new campus, the University of Birmingham Dubai campus, that has been opened up just this year.
Wow, looking good.
It looks very new and modern. We have a kind of a holding place, but we're looking forward to opening our new campus. The plans look absolutely fantastic.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, me being from the UK and you obviously at the University of Birmingham in England, we're kind of used to educational institutions being a bit kind of older and bits added here and bits added there and renovated. And then obviously in Dubai, everything's so new and shiny and modern. It's a completely different kind of learning environment, I think, for lots of us.
Yeah, it is new and modern. But I think what the best thing about a university coming from the UK, and particularly the University of Birmingham, a Russell Group university, is that it brings the history with it. So you can have the new and the modern classrooms, but you can also have the established reputation and the excellence and the real strong grounding of education at the same time.
So I introduced you there as being from the Sports Rehabilitation and Exercise Department, but you've obviously got a very kind of digital social media brain as well. But let's go back to basics. Your background, you've been a teacher yourself and a sports coach?
Yeah, I was a physical education teacher and a school sports coordinator. And then from that, I went on to do further studies, such as a master's and a PhD. And that's how I've ended up working with researching with young people and working in university.
So you've come over, and we're talking this afternoon about the impact social media has on mental health and the well-being of young people. And also, you've been talking a lot in Dubai about how technology can be used with young people to encourage them into sports and having a really positive experience as well. We'd love to hear from you on these topics this afternoon. Now, Dr. Victoria, be honest. How much time do you think you use social media for per day?
Well, I suppose it depends. It depends. You're always checking your phone for a notification. So if you've got multiple social media accounts like I do have, then probably quite a lot every time I check my phone.
Someone introduced me to this battery setting on my iPhone the other day, and it tells you what percentage of time you're using on different platforms. It was pretty sobering, I have to say. As I said to you earlier, my kind of social media work lines are a bit blurred, which is totally my excuse. But we probably do use it more than we realise. And one of those headlines I touched on there about that phantom buzzing, where you think you're getting a notification or you think your phone's ringing and you feel that buzz in your back pocket or in your handbag. I've definitely had that.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. So if you, as I said, be honest, tell us this afternoon how much time you think you spent on social media, or if you've completely opted out. We would love to hear your conversation side on this as well. I've turned off some notifications now. I've turned off Instagram because what I find, if I get an Instagram notification, it's literally down the rabbit hole. And I'm like, oh, you know, let's see what so-and-so's doing. And you emerge 20 minutes later, kind of forgetting why you went onto your phone in the first place. So you're coming from an education background in Dubai to be talking about sports, really. So what's the research you've been doing that you think could be beneficial to those of us in Dubai?
So what we've been doing is a lot of the stuff around young people and technology tends to be really heavily influenced by adult perspectives. And lots of apps are being designed for young people. Lots of judgments are being made about young people, about how they should use apps, wearable devices and social media. But what's happened is that nobody's really asked the young people. And we're starting to pick up on some of these threads that, you know, adults think that every time young people are on social media, they're going to experience cyberbullying or they're going to be really negatively impacted.
There's a big fear factor there.
Yeah, risk and fear. But nobody's actually spent quite a long time working with young people to ask them that. And most of the evidence is based on a survey or it's based on a small group of young people. So we don't actually really get any kind of indication of what young people think. And then going back to how long time they spend on it, you have to think about the amount of time young people spend on their phones and on social media all the time. Well, if you equate that, the amount of time they spend on, and then the number of people that experience cyberbullying, the frequency of it, is it that much of a risk? Or is there more positives going on there?
So what are the kind of main pain points that young people are coming up with? What do they want and what do they really want to move away from when it comes to apps and social?
Well, they want, what they want is they want to be continuously connected with their friends. And so social media acts as a massive extension of the playground. So what they're doing online and through social media isn't really that different. What happens is it's more intense. So they're connected all the time. And that does create the risk arguments because they're connected till past 10 at night and they've got to be up at school in the morning. Mm-hmm. So that is part of the risk aspect. But what young people want is to stay connected and they want information that's accessible. And that's what they can get through social media. They can search for things. They can also find out what their friends are looking at and fit in with the trends and fit in with what they think is popular and cool.
So what do you think teenagers are kind of striving for? Is it that acceptance? Is it fame? Is it the financial side? You know, what do we think that they're using social media for?
Well, when we worked with young people, their needs were varied and what they wanted from social media varied. You could put it in stereotypical categories that the girls would want things related to body image or the boys would want things to make them more buff. But that's not a representative of what actually the data showed. It was really varied. And the reason it varies is because adolescence in particular is a period where your body changes so quickly that one minute you're going to be thinking one thing and another minute you're going to be thinking someone else.
It's so funny, isn't it? Looking back at kind of the 14 to 16, I mean, I was a shambles as a teenager. Like really, I think most people are. The real ups and downs of emotions, you know, being fickle about interests, being fickle about friendship groups. It's a really turbulent time. And as you said, you know, people are looking after trends and what they're going for. That must be really quick moving as well. What's the platforms and apps that people seem to be really enjoying or the most popular at the moment then amongst young people?
Well, so in the social media work, it was Snapchat and Instagram. And then followed by that would be WhatsApp and YouTube. In terms of the health apps, it was Fitbit health app that seemed to be popular, Apple Health. And then it really varied. There wasn't really any kind of strong indication of what was popular on the health apps. It was more generic. I mean, there was 141 different health apps identified
wow.
from a group of 250 people.
I was like, who knew there were so many? And what was the age group you were looking at, Victoria?
Age 13 to 18.
And actually, even within that age group, there could be 18-year-olds who look at what 13-year-olds are using going, oh, that's really sad, I'm so over that.
Yeah, yeah, and differences between schools, which I think obviously is a key thing here because there's so varied schools and so varied different national curriculums and families. You're going to get a lot of variants. So if we did that in the perhaps a UK context, then I'd imagine it probably is different here.
Probably would be in terms of different nationalities, different incomes, and as you said, even different parts of town where those schools are. So what's the plan for Dubai? You're hoping to introduce some research and maybe get some tech into schools for sports?
Well, yeah, so I was interested in the Expo 2020 and a lot of that work is around Youth Connect and innovation and creativity and inspiring young people to create their own learning experiences. There's also the agendas around well-being and happiness, and we've seen really clear connections between what we've been doing and kind of the agendas focused over here. So our intention of coming over was to kind of think, okay, so if these are the needs of the context of Dubai, then perhaps our work could help young people have more positive experiences about their health and well-being.
Robert says, zero media, social media time. I have no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram or LinkedIn, but I think I'm surviving quite well. And he's saying, didn't realise, but about 5 hours plus a day. Simon saying 3 hours, Michael saying 4 hours, Adnan saying, come to think of it, I usually spend around 5 hours a day on social media. We're talking about the impact of social media on young people's well-being and mental health with a real expert. We've got Dr. Victoria Goodyear here from the University of Birmingham Sport and Exercise and Rehabilitation Department at the University of Birmingham. She's been in town to speak to some Dubai experts and institutions about research done around sport and getting young people into sport, maybe through unexpected means such as technology and digital apps as well. So Victoria, what, you're a sporty person, you came from a physical education background and got into coaching. What do you think incentivizes kids to get into sport? And do we think technology could play a role there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the typical answers of what incentivizes people to get into sport and physical activity is obviously families, so parents and also siblings, but also having role models, and also the opportunities to engage in physical activity. So the areas, the different sports or physical activities that are available in the leisure centres or clubs. But I think increasingly technology is playing more of a role in that because there's more information online. There's also different exercises that are available on the health apps. So things like 7-minute workouts, it's making you be able to do exercises that are quick, easy and efficient.
So a little bit more accessible. It's interesting about the role model point as well, because, you know, back in the day, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we would see those role models, those sporting heroes on newspapers, on the news channels. You know, we'd be glued to the Olympics, you know, kind of every summer. Whereas now we can be checking in with our role models anytime through their own social media, and it's ever present, really. So in terms of kind of the wearable technologies, you mentioned Fitbits, the biggie, and a lot of people using their Apple Watches and that Apple Health Check through their phones as well. Does it tend to be more boys than girls who are more into the fitness apps, or is it a pretty even split?
We didn't see any kind of differences between gender, but what was interesting about the study was that even though the young people say that they're using these, when we did an actual experiment on the young people using Fitbits, what happened was the kind of January gym effect. So that they used them for about 4 weeks and then got bored, and they either lost the Fitbit or just stopped using it completely. So whilst young people are trying out these different things, some of them are not sustaining it.
And do you think that perhaps goes back to the point of it's adults designing technology or so-called solutions for young people without actually bringing them into the loop?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. You've reached exactly the right point there. It's about us thinking that, okay, because adults find that interesting, then young people are going to find that interesting. And actually, you know, young people tend to like playing and games and physical activity. I'm not quite sure that they're interested in 10,000 steps.
Yeah, so what do you think, what elements could be brought in to really get young people excited when it comes to tech and sport? Would it be that kind of game element, the social element, competitiveness?
Yeah, so we also looked at the competitions, because you could have step competitions with your friends through Fitbits. And generally, the whole kind of class competitions weren't effective. Now, evidence suggests that whole school competitions or class competitions are a thing that particularly turns girls off in physical education. And that's been known for years and years.
I'm nodding knowingly going, mm-hmm, yeah, because we all knew the girls at school who were amazing and they didn't make anyone feel good at all. And it was quite nice to go home and escape that. So I can imagine having it on your phone or on your smartwatch would be a pretty reminder.
Yeah, but the what actually we found was that if it was in smaller groups that the young people created themselves and they defined their own terms of their competition, then they were more likely to engage.
So it's about creating their own communities, and I guess you could add a team element to that as well. It's not necessarily about being competitive. It could be working towards a common goal. What about things like physical incentives, whether it was kind of cinema tickets or vouchers? Do you think that could perhaps play a role?
We didn't ask anything about that, but knowing what the evidence says on perhaps teenage girls and how much they like doing those kind of things, then it could be one solution, yeah.
You can take that for free, Victoria. John's messaging in saying, I took Facebook off my phone and now probably spend max an hour on social media every day. Removing Facebook was the best thing I could, and I would strongly advise it. If you want to let us know how much time you spend on social media this afternoon, get in touch 4001 or use the free Dubai iMessenger app. We will put you into the draw to win a 2-month supply of Barakat Fresh worth 500 dirhams. This is fruit and vegetables delivered right to your door in a couple of clicks. You can go to barakatfresh.ae, register your details, have a look at the fruit and veg online and schedule your delivery. So enter our competition. Be honest. Tell us how many hours, minutes or maybe zero time you spend on social media every day. 4001 or use the free Dubai iMessenger app. I think I'm probably looking around, oh, I don't know, 2 to 3 hours possibly. I'm really guilty of that kind of late night check and then early morning check, and I know you shouldn't. I'm trying to be that person that gets a radio alarm clock so I know what time it is in the middle of the night, but the minute the phone is being very much used for that. Victoria, you're into Twitter, you're into Instagram?
Yeah, I use Twitter for professional purposes. So we have like a teacher community.
It's like your excuse.
So I use that for professional purposes, and I use Facebook and Instagram for personal reasons. They're kept very private.
Are they?
Yeah.
It's interesting because from, you know, being in a generally expat community, I feel like it's added so much value to my life in terms of keeping in touch with friends and family back home. It is hugely valuable. And things like, you know, sending videos on WhatsApp or voice notes to my parents. There's a huge amount of good to be said for social media. Just want to read out a quote. This is from Shirley Kramer, CB. She's the chief executive of the Royal Society for Public Health. And she says, social media is now so entrenched in the lives of young people that it's no longer possible to ignore it when talking about mental health. With its almost universal reach and unprecedented ability to connect people from all walks of life, social media holds vast potential to be a positive catalyst for good mental health. Yet there are risks which, if not addressed and countered, can cause significant problems for young people's well-being. And new polling commissioned by the Royal Society of Public Health suggests that more than half the public, this is in the UK, 52% say not enough is being done by social media companies to address the impact of social media on mental health and well-being, with 2 in 5 also saying that the government is not doing enough. Whose responsibility do you think it is, Victoria, when it comes to making sure, I know young people's a real catch-all term, so let's say kind of under 18s are using social media in a responsible way. Do you think it comes down to parents? Is there education element from teachers? Is it government? Is it social media? Or most likely a combination of all?
I think it's a combination of all, and young people, there needs to be a joined up approach. And there also needs to be an approach that recognises the voice of young people. At the minute, all of those people that you've just mentioned are talking about risk, 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 with the solution to be banning or preventing
use. Just not realistic.
No. And not how much social media has become an integral part of life. You know, you mentioned about vouchers and stuff a moment ago. Well, that's normally how we purchase things now or do things.
That's right.
So banning it is not a solution. We need to find out its role and how it can be used positively to promote health and well-being, because you know, buying those tickets and stuff is things that make us happy, so that's obviously a positive. So we need to find out what's going on.
Absolutely. You know, as we said, it's not going away. It's going to be a case of working with the schools and educating parents as well about how to do this. Are you seeing in the UK more schools talking about sensible social media use? Is that coming into the conversation over there?
We had a workshop with teachers, researchers and policymakers. The general consensus was there was not sure what we should do. So there's no kind of evidence-based approaches of what works. There's a lot of reactive approaches, but what we need now is programs and evidence that works in schools. So different subjects have different evidence of different ways of teaching that works, and now we need to develop that for supporting people in terms of their moral education, and in terms of their experiences of technology.
Joined this afternoon by Dr. Victoria Goodyear from the University of Birmingham School of Sport, Exercise and Rehabilitation. I'm Helen Farmer with you, and I'm joined by Dr. Victoria Goodyear from the University of Birmingham Sport, Exercise and Rehabilitation Department. And she's here in Dubai to talk to schools, teachers, sport coaches and parents to help us better understand how young people use social media and digital technologies in order to help them connect with other young people and empower positive health and well-being behaviours. Now, we've talked about the sports aspect, Dr. Victoria, but you did a study that got some big headlines in the UK, came out earlier this year. Daily Mail got hold of it, and of course, they went sensationalist on the headline. They said selfies are worse for children than bullying because photos make teenagers question their body and appearance. So your study highlighted peer pressure on teenagers about photographs of their friends, looked at around, how many people did you sample? Over 1,000?
Yeah, it was 1,000 in the social media study, 1,346.
<It's> precisely.
Yeah.
In fact, when you were analysing that data, you felt every single response.
Yeah.
And what age group was that looking at?
13 to 19.
Okay, so again, a big spread of teenagers. And the kind of the takeaways, what surprised you about, what kind of questions you were asking and what were the big surprises in the research?
Well, the big surprises were how critical young people actually were.
Of themselves?
Of the information that they saw online.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
So what we saw was, you know, we'd make the assumption that they're going to look at every, you know, image from the Kardashians and make an assumption that that's what they should be turning their bodies like, or different kind of role models. And actually, most of them said that they just swiped past it and they were able to judge what was relevant and not.
So we haven't perhaps been giving teenagers enough credit, and they're maybe far more sophisticated users of social media than we thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So they can judge content that's relevant to them, content that's personalised, and often that tends to be influenced by their experiences of school physical education or their family. But going back to what we said earlier about their needs changing, what's interesting about social media is it's very powerful. So if they're feeling vulnerable at any point in time, that's when they get drawn in. And the information that you've just suggested about the selfies, that's a very powerful thing that draws them in, particularly selfies of each other their other age.
So it tends to be more the photos of their friends and peer pressure that's perhaps, I don't want to say damaging, but has more of an impact than that of celebrity culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because they can see other people their age, and they obviously have similar experiences and similar bodies, similar age. That's why it tends to have more of an influence. They're also kind of aware that a lot of the images posted by celebrities, and particularly the what they would refer to as the Instagram model, where people become famous through Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what makes me laugh about that? If Instagram just disappears tomorrow, you're nobody. it's really interesting to think if, you know, if Mark Zuckerberg just turned around and decided that Facebook and Instagram were to no longer exist, there were so many people that would not have an income or career or reputation or fame.
Mm. Yeah, so they kind of know that things are a little bit fake.
So they understand that things might, not just a filter, but there may well have been photo editing that have gone before something was posted.
Yeah, and actually they know a lot about the filters, because if you used Instagram's pre-selected filters, then apparently those aren't the things that are in and cool. So it's the specialist filters that need to be used.
It's a whole new world. So as you said, it's not just you, you know, it's not just your Valencia. It's using specialist software and apps.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's great. I find that really encouraging that teenagers are going, yeah, her waist isn't actually that thin.
Mm.
And talking about that kind of Instagram model look, that, you know, body types, you know, come and go in terms of popularity. But the one that seems to be the big trend on Instagram is this kind of, you know, thick, slim, this thin, you know, thin waist, big bum, kind of gym-honed, slim body that has often been enhanced by not only photo software, but also surgery. So the fact that they're able and are sophisticated enough to discount that when it comes to celebrities, but they're actually feeling more pressure from people around them in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tricky one. As I said, the Daily Mail went really big on this. There was one quote which was talking about it being worse than bullying. Do you think that's true?
I think that might have been slightly taken out of context.
No.
I don't think that there was anything to suggest that. I think what the young people actually said to us, and it's in our paper, was that that perhaps adults don't necessarily always understand the real pressures that young people experience. And they focus a lot on cyberbullying, but not necessarily the issues that they experience related to peer selfies.
And what do you think the issues are to do with the peer selfies? What do you think the teens are really struggling with?
I think it's seeing someone of your age looking very either buff or looking very slim or the ideal body. And that puts a pressure on someone to look and be a certain way. And if they're saying that, you know, they've eaten this certain diet or they've had a particular smoothie drink and they're posting an image of their bodies, that's a quite powerful, strong form of peer pressure to change your body and do something.
And one of the trends we're seeing in online and social media is actually moving away from these celebrities who've got millions of followers towards the micro influencers. And the peers are really the ultimate example of a micro influencer. And that could be, I went to this restaurant, you know, I tried the smoothie, and they probably have far more sway than somebody who it's quite obvious is being paid for sponsored content. So very interesting. Now, what I really like about your study is the fact that you're balanced. You understand that social media has its issues and its glitches, and that's always going to be the case. It's relatively new. And as I said earlier, we are navigating this brave new world. But there's a huge amount of good that comes out of social media as well. You know, we saw the Parkland shooting, and what's been really interesting about coming that was the teenager survivors took it upon themselves, and they really kind of spearheaded this impassioned push for gun control at a time when it would have been very easy for them to be grieving privately, but they took to social media and just hours after the massacre a 17-year-old called David Hogg directed his comments to lawmakers on CNN. You know, I think we've all seen Emma Gonzalez's speech really taking over Twitter and creating a real movement. And I think that's probably in, you know, Silicon Valley, that's probably the utopia that they were looking for when they started social media, of people really using it for good and it becoming a real democracy online, actually. Where do you see it going over the next kind of 5 years, Victoria?
I'm not sure anyone has that answer, to be honest.
It'd be nice though, wouldn't it?
It would be nice to know.
A few million in the bank, thanks very much.
If you go backwards, I mean, I don't think anybody expected Snapchat to take off as well as it has, because it was initially seen as something quite gimmicky with the bunny ears and dog filters. Mm-hmm. But it actually has become one of the most popular social media sites.
Do you use Snapchat?
Not as much as the other social media.
Yeah,
size.
It makes me feel really old. I kind of look at it and feel like a proper old lady using it. I'm like, what am I supposed to? I just want to look like a bunny. Why do I have to press these buttons? I can't help but wonder if perhaps things might be moving in the opposite direction in the future. Maybe, you know, we're all sharing so much online that privacy could be the ultimate prize, that maybe people are going to be rejecting social media in the future and really rejecting it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the evidence from the young people would say that they prefer communicating in smaller groups. So they're very particular about what information they share and where. So they will share perhaps more personal information in private WhatsApp groups, but more polished information or posts in Instagram.
Okay, so it's different content for different platforms.
Yes.
Some great messages coming in. Tanya saying, I spent 8 hours on the internet and only 1 hour on social media, on WhatsApp. Cliff saying, hi, I deleted Facebook in January 2017. Best decision ever. There is so much negativity out there. I suddenly found myself with free time, joined the gym, lost 26 kilos. I did switch to Instagram, which only floods my feed with fitness videos, which is a plus rather than people's negative opinions on Facebook. And I think that actually speaks to a really interesting point, that you can create your own online environment. You can choose who you follow. You can almost create something of an echo chamber. If you want to be surrounded by people who are going to inspire you, follow them. You don't have to follow people that are going to make you feel rubbish. Well, coming up now to our break. Now, when we come back, we're going to be hearing a really important TED Talk about social media and mental health. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Victoria Goodyear. Really, really appreciate it. Now, we're talking on the couch this afternoon. It's your weekly dose of therapy. We've been talking about social media and the impact on mental health in young people and adults. And we've had some great texts coming in, people confessing how much time they spend on the internet. 4 to 5 hours, says Michelle. 3 hours, says Benita. I think I'm about 3 hours as well. Now, this is social media expert Bailey Parnell, who was recently named one of Canada's top 100 most powerful women. She's an award-winning digital marketer, public speaker, and businesswoman who currently works in digital marketing at Ryerson University. Her TED Talk, "Is Social Media Hurting Your Mental Health?" gives us an insight into our social media behaviour. Listen to this.
I'm fat. Wow, I'm fat. She's only 19 years old. What am I doing with my life? Hey, 2 likes. Nice. Do I like this photo? Does she really need more likes? Hey, I hope I'm going to be invited to the wedding. What? 1 more like. Nice. Welcome to the internal monologue of a typical social media scroll. A monologue that so many of us have every day, but we don't think about. We don't talk about it. In fact, many of us can't even recognize it happening. Now, just over a year ago, my sister and I took a 4-day vacation to Jasper, Alberta. This was the first no-work vacation I had taken in 4 years. On this vacation, I was going dark. I was turning on airplane mode, no email, and no social media. Now, the first day I was there, I was still experiencing phantom vibration syndrome. That's where you think your phone went off and you check and it didn't. I was checking incessantly. I was distracted in conversation. I was seeing these gorgeous sights Jasper had to offer, and my first reaction was to take out my phone and post it on social. But of course, it wasn't there. Now, the second day was a little bit easier. And you might be thinking I'm ridiculous, but I hadn't been completely disconnected in over 4 years. This was practically a new experience again. It wasn't until the 4th day I was there that I was finally comfortable without my phone. I was sitting with my sister, literally on the side of this mountain, when I started thinking to myself, what is social media doing to me? What is it doing to my peers? That was only 4 days, and it was anxiety-inducing. It was stressful, and it resulted in withdrawals. That's when I started to ask questions and have since started my master's research into this subject. You see, I've worked in social marketing, primarily in higher education, for most of my career. That means I work with a lot of 18 to 24-year-olds, which also happens to be the most active demographic on social media. The other thing you need to know about me is that I'm young enough to have grown up with social media, but just old enough to be able to critically engage with it in a way that 12-year-old me probably couldn't. So my life is social media, personally, professionally, and academically. And if it was doing this to me, what was it doing to everyone else? Well, I immediately found out I wasn't alone. The Center for Collegiate Mental Health found that the top 3 diagnoses on university campuses are anxiety, depression, and stress. And numerous studies from the US, Canada, the UK, you name it, have linked this high social media use with these high levels of anxiety and depression. But the scary thing is that high social media use is almost everyone I know. It's my friends, it's my family, my colleagues. 90% of 18 to 29-year-olds are on social media. We spend on average 2 hours a day there. We don't even eat for 2 hours a day. 70% of the Canadian population is on social media. Our voter turnout isn't even 70%. Anything we do this often is worthy of critical observation. Anything we spend this much time doing has lasting effects on us. So let me introduce you to 4 of the most common stressors on social media that, if go unchecked, have potential to become full-blown mental health issues. And this is by no means an exhaustive list. 1, the highlight reel. Just like in sports, the highlight reel is a collection of the best and brightest moments. Social media is our personal highlight reel. It's where we put up our wins, or when we look great, or when we're out with friends and family. But we struggle with insecurity because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reels. We are constantly comparing ourselves to others. And yes, this was happening before social media with TV and celebrity, But now it's happening all the time, and it's directly linked to you. Why can't I afford vacation? Why am I just sitting here in my PJs watching Netflix? I want to be on a beach. But here's the thing. I know her very well. I knew this was out of the ordinary for her. I knew she was typically drowning in schoolwork. But we think, who wants to see that? The highlights are what people want to see. In fact, when your highlights do well, you encounter the second stressor on social media, which is number two, social currency. Just like the dollar, a currency is literally something we use to attribute value to a good or service. In social media, these likes, the comments, the shares, they've become this form of social currency by which we attribute value to something. In marketing, we call it the economy of attention. Everything is competing for your attention, and when you give something a like or a piece of that finite attention, it becomes a recorded transaction attributing value, which is great if you're selling albums or clothing. The problem is that in our social media, we are the product, and we're letting others attribute value to us. You know someone or are someone that's taken down a photo because it didn't get as many likes as you thought it would. And I'll admit, I've been right there with you. We took our product off the shelf because it wasn't selling fast enough. This is changing our sense of identity. We are tying up our self-worth with what others think about us, and then we're quantifying it for everyone to see. And we're obsessed. We have to get that selfie just right, and we will take 300 photos to make sure. And then we'll wait for the perfect time to post. We're so obsessed, we have biological responses when we can't participate. Which leads me to the third stressor on social media. Number three, FOMO. It's a light phrase, we all throw it around. But FOMO, or the fear of missing out, is an actual social anxiety from the fear that you are missing a potential connection, event, or opportunity. A collection of Canadian universities found that 7 out of 10 students said they would get rid of their social networking accounts if it were not for fear of being left out of the loop. That FOMO you feel, the highlight reels, the social currency, those are all results of a relatively quote-unquote normal social media experience. But what if going on social every day was a terrifying experience, where you not just questioned your self-worth, but you questioned your safety? Perhaps the worst stressor on social media is number four, online harassment. 40% of online adults have experienced online harassment. 73% have witnessed it. And the unfortunate reality is that it is much worse and much more likely if you're a woman, LGBTQ, person of color, Muslim. I think you get the point. The problem is that in the news, we're seeing these big stories. We see women like Anita Sarkeesian being close to shamed off the internet and sent death and rape threats for sharing their feminism. We see these stories once it's too late. But what about the everyday online harassment? What about that ugly Snapchat you sent your friend with the intention of it being private, and now it's up on Facebook? And so it's just one photo. It's funny. It's just one mean comment. It's not a big deal. But when these micro moments happen over and over again over time, that's when we have a macro problem. We have to recognize these everyday instances as well. The effects aren't always easy to recognize. How many of you have noticed the notifications at the top of my screen? Yeah. And how many of you, like me, are bothered that they're not checked? Yeah. Okay, here, let me check them for you. Okay. Just one small example of what this can do to you. Maybe you simply cannot focus because your notifications are going off the handle and you need to check. That need eventually becomes addiction. Regarding social media, we are already experiencing impairments similar to substance dependencies. With every like, you get a shot of that feel-good chemical, dopamine. You gain more of that social currency. So what do we do to feel good? We check likes. Just one more time. We post. Just one more time. We're anxious if we don't have access. Doesn't that sound like every drug you've ever heard of? Yeah. So when that grows, when your social media use goes unconfronted over time, that's when we see the rising levels of anxiety and depression. The FOMO, the distractions, the highlight reels, the comparisons, it's a lot, and it's all the time. The Canadian Association of Mental Health
found that as young as grade 7 to 12 students who spent 2 hours a day on social media reported higher levels of anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts. For those of you doing the math, that's as young as 12 years old. Now here's the thing. I like social media. I do. I love it. And hearing what I've said today might make you think I want you to get off of it, but I don't. You see, I don't think it's going anywhere. So I'm not going to waste my time telling you to spend less time on social media. Frankly, I don't think abstinence is an option anymore. But that doesn't mean you can't practice safe social. You see, everything I've talked about today has nothing and everything to do with social media. What do I mean? I mean social media is neither good nor bad. It's just the most recent tool we're using to do what we've always done, tell stories and communicate with each other. You wouldn't blame Samsung Television for a bad TV show. Twitter doesn't make people write hateful posts. So when we talk about this dark side of social media, what we're really talking about is the dark side of people. That dark side that makes harassers harass. That insecurity that makes you take down a photo you were excited to share. That dark side that looks at a picture of a happy family and wonders why yours doesn't look like that. So as parents, as educators, as friends, as bosses, this dark side is what we need to focus on. Here's the good news. The good news is that recognizing a problem is the first step to fixing it. So hearing this talk is just that. Step one, recognize the problem. Do you know the power of suggestion? When someone tells you about something and then you start seeing it everywhere. That's why awareness is critical. Because now you will at least be better able to recognize these effects if and when they happen to you. The second thing you're going to do is audit your social media diet. The same way we monitor what goes into our mouth, monitor what goes into your head and heart. Ask yourself, did that Facebook scroll make me feel better or worse off? Why am I responding this way to that photo? And then ask yourself if you're happy with the results. And you might be, and that's okay. But if you're not, move on to step three. Create a better online experience. After my partner did his audit, he realized his self-worth was too tied up in social media, but particularly celebrities reminding him of the things he didn't have. So he unfollowed all brands and all celebrities, and that worked for him. But it might not be celebrities for you. The last thing you're gonna do is model good behavior. Offline, we're taught not to bully other kids in the playground. We're taught to respect others and treat them how they deserve to be treated. Social media is a tool, and it's a tool that can be used for good. For more positive groups, for revolutions. So is social media hurting your mental health? The answer is it does not have to. Social can tear you down, yes. Or it can lift you up, where you leave feeling better off, or have an actual laugh out loud. If I only have 24 hours in the day, if I'm gonna spend 2 of those hours on social media, then I prefer my experiences to be full of inspiration, laughs, motivation, and a whole lot of grumpy cat in Disney movies. Thank you.
That was social media expert Bailey Parnell in her TED Talk, Is Social Media Hurting Your Mental Health?
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.